And the first topic for the morning is papers 5, 5B, and 5C. Some issues on share-based payment. Ken?
Good morning, everybody. As stated in agenda paper 5, a cover note, in the July 2012 meeting, the interpretation committee decided to revisit three issues related to IFRS 2 and ask the staff to update the analysis and outreach on those issues. In this meeting, I'd like to present the updates on two issues out of the three issues in Agenda Paper 5B and 5C. Agenda Paper 5B addresses net settlement provision issue, which is how to account for share-based payment transactions in which the entity withholds a specified portion of the shares to meet its tax withholding requirements and pay cash to the taxation authorities to settle the tax obligations. Agenda Paper 5C addresses an issue of a modification of a share-based payment transaction from cash settled to equity settled. I'd like to start with Agenda Paper 5B, if there is no preference for the order on your side. As stated in Agenda Paper 5B, we think that responses to our outreach request confirm that this issue is widespread and there is significant diversity in practice. In addition, we note that views and opinions expressed in the previous three meetings and comment letters received were almost evenly split between view A and view B, that the cash settled and equity settled. We think that these facts indicate that some amendment to IFRS 2 is required to clarify the accounting for this type of share-based payment transactions. However, given the significant divergent views expressed in the past, we do not think that interpretation committee can decide which view is an appropriate interpretation of the current requirements in IFRS 2 in an efficient manner. In addition, we also noted a concern that if view A was taken, there would be a huge operational challenges in estimating its future tax withholding obligations. Accordingly, on balance, we would like to recommend that committee should propose an amendment to IFRS 2 in line with approach 3 in paragraph 40, which is to provide specific guidance for certain types of share-based payment transaction with net settlement provisions in order to mitigate the diversity in practice and operational challenges. Please note that approach 3 described in paragraph 40 is similar to the guidance under US GAAP, but slightly different in that under US GAAP, if, for example, the agreement states that amount to be withheld is in excess of the statutory minimum requirements, the award would be classified as cash settled entirely. On the other hand, our proposal would result in splitting the award into two awards, and the portion to be withheld being classified as cash settled, and the other portion being classified as equity settled in accordance with the manner of settlement stated in the arrangement. The primary reason for proposing that different approach is that, in principle, we think that a single award should be divided into two awards and classified differently. If there are two types of awards in a single arrangement, that should be classified differently in accordance with IFRS 2, although we acknowledge that operational challenges would still remain for share-based payment awards with net settlement feature that is outside the scope of this specific guidance we are proposing. Do you agree with the staff recommendation?
Scott?
I was surprised to see the recommendation to add an exception like this into IFRS 2. It doesn't seem consistent generally with the way we do things in IFRS. That being said, this exception as it exists in US GAAP has not proven to be problematic. I don't think that people look at it as being bad accounting and that people can apply this well enough. So, I think that putting this kind of exception into IFRS should not pose a big problem. So, in general, I'm supportive of the way the staff is going. I would point out that as drafted, this would not work in the United States because Approach 3 says the specific guidance could be limited to a situation in which a provision in law or agreement requires an entity to withhold a portion of the equity instruments. That is not the requirement in the United States. The requirement in the United States is that the withholding tax be remitted to the IRS. How the company comes up with the withholding tax is not specified in the law. Some companies do it by withholding a portion of the equity instruments. Others just withhold it from the employee's paycheck and give them all the equity instruments upon exercise. Others, when the employee exercises, require the employee to write a check to the company for the withholding. So if you mean this to cover the situation that exists in the U.S., which I think you do mean it to, it can't be drafted as when the law requires the equity instruments to be withheld, because the law does not require that.
About agreement with the employee?
Yeah, that's certainly fine. And in fact, I mean, I think, you know, one thing might be considered is what if the agreement with the employee gives the employee a choice? You can either write a check for the withholding tax or you can net settle. In the U.S., as long as the net settle is limited to minimum withholding, we say that's okay, even though the employee has a choice. It's just as long as the employee doesn't have a choice to net settle for more than the minimum withholding. That's when we call it a liability award, and where, in fact, I think you'd say that some of it needs to be a liability award as well. So the agreement doesn't have to require net settlement. The law doesn't have to require net settlement. But in the U.S., the law does not require net settlement. It is silent on it. So as long as the agreement with the employee provides for net settlement only up to the amount of the minimum withholding, it's okay if that's at the employee's option. It's okay if it's at the employer's option, as long as it can't go higher. Then, you know, the exception in U.S. GAAP applies, and I think that's what you're shooting for here.
I'm curious about, and since Scott, you raised it, I had flagged this paragraph with a question mark as well. The term minimum withholding.
Yes.
I assume you're saying that's what you, in the U.S. context, that's what you get. You go to the table for married filing jointly, and you phrase cross and. No.
It's
25%.
It's a mandatory requirement to withhold 25%. And it can be done, as Scott said, it's done at the convenience of the employee.
Okay.
And most employers offer them the choice, do you want us to net withhold, or you can just have it, as Scott said, taken out of your paycheck, or...
All right, now let me give you a different...
Now, you could also have state withholding on top of that as well.
Federal is 25%.
Yeah.
The FASB never paid any stock compensation, so I never had to... learn about this.
But over here you're getting some.
over here, Her Majesty's Revenue Service sends you a notice and says, this is your withholding category.
Okay. What
they call the pay-as-you-go scheme.
Yep.
So I assume that category, pardon me?
Pay-as-you-earn,
yes. I assume that would be the statutory minimum, whatever.
It's my understanding that for companies on U.S. GAAP that have employees in Europe and other places, yes, there are various tables and methods of computing what is the minimum required withholding.
So that might be significantly higher in
sure.
some jurisdictions. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm more better educated now. Other comments? Andrew?
Well, I was fine with where the staff was headed. But I just wondered, instead of doing a sort of very specific fact pattern exception, I didn't quite understand the agent principle analysis earlier in the paper. Why can't we just say that the entity is the agent, and then you sort of come at the thing from a more principles-based approach rather than a sort of specific exception? I didn't fully understand your agent principle analysis, because you seem to conclude that the entity is the principal, if I've understood it correctly.
Yeah, I think it's much better to introduce a principle-based approach for this specific guidance. But my understanding is that in the past three meetings, the committee couldn't reach a consensus on a principle in the IFRS 2 in respect of this issue. So in my mind, it's a bit difficult for us to go back to the principle-based approach without any principle agreed and identified in this meeting. And I think the principal agent analysis, the core discussions for the principles in the IFRS 2. So that's why we introduced, we proposed a very narrow scope, specific transaction targeted approach. That's the reason.
Laurence?
Picking up on Andrew's comment, because I was also on the agent approach, ultimately the board will have to prove if it is going to be a narrow scope amendment. We may want to make a recommendation as it is, explaining that in the past we could not get agreement deciding whether it's the entities acting as a principal or as an agent. Is this something we want to flag to the board? Would you prefer to just rather conclude that the entity acts as an agent, or do you prefer to go to approach three?
Just as in all staff papers, we have always insisted that the staff make a recommendation. I think we should tell the board what we think. I don't have any problem with telling them that we've explored two avenues and that they may wish to do the same, but that we have we picked one or the other. Charlotte?
I think I have similar points. I didn't understand some of the arguments in paragraphs 23 and 24 because it didn't seem to meet the requirements of a cash-based transaction because the entity is not paying for services it's received. So I didn't understand that. So I was sort of instinctively in view B. And although the staff amendment seemed to get you there for the statutory part, I still wasn't sure what the accounting would be if you were still back in the view A, view B divide for any excess that was paid and hadn't we still left that problem out there?
And on that point, the classification of the excess, we would say the part that is settled in cash would be classified as cash settled. And that, as Ken pointed out in the paper, would be a difference from US GAAP because when you go into the excess area in US GAAP, the whole thing is cash settled. So we would say the bit that's cash settled.
It's not the whole thing is considered cash settled. It's that it's considered indexed to something other than a market service or performance condition, which under US GAAP makes it a liability award. We call it a liability even if it's not cash settled, if it's indexed to something other than those conditions.
So it's accounted for as liability settled rather than equity settled.
That's correct.
Right.
You said cash settled, yeah. So I just wanted that. That's not the logic in US GAAP.
So that means you're saying view A for the remainder.
Yes.
Just didn't agree with.
Joanna.
I'm comfortable with the staff approach and recommendation, but I do have a concern about giving a specific exemption or exception or whatever it is in IFRS 2. It's not where, as Scott said, it's not where we should be in IFRS. And I wonder whether, rather than absolutely specifically talk about this, and it comes back to what Andrew and Laurence were talking about the principal agent, is rather than actually do this, to say in these circumstances, it is deemed that the company is the agent as opposed to the principal. So yes, it is still specific, but it's actually linking it back to the principle of saying, so it's not an exception, but it's actually saying that it is actually an interpretation to say in these circumstances the company is the agent, not the principal, because that might go slightly more favourably against the absolutely specific exception. And I've only just thought about it now, so you're looking perturbed as though that's not going to work, Michael.
I'm just thinking it through. I mean, it's another way of achieving describing it in that way. And it doesn't, we'd need to think about how, what sort of transactions it would apply to.
Yeah, that would be my concern, would be unintended consequences. If you do a limited targeted exception, it can only apply to what it applies to, and you don't have that worry. Scott?
Yeah, I actually, the principal agent argument doesn't do it for me. Okay, even if the company is acting as an agent of the employee, and so the employee tells the company, you are my agent. Instead of giving me stock, give him cash. That's still cash settled.
Yep.
It doesn't help me resolve the problem. That's why I think that the exception is the only way to take care of it.
Yeah, I wasn't involved directly in the conversations the last time this went around, but I did consult with some of the staff on it, and I think Scott's point is exactly the one. There was a fair amount of opinion that designating an agent to pay cash made the award cash settled.
Yeah.
Others?
As far as I remember the discussion, I think the proponents of, I think it's view B, said that the employer is an agent because the employer is paying the tax on behalf of the employee. And the risk lies with the employee in the sense that you never know how many shares the employer has to keep back in order to pay your tax. It's your tax, the employee's tax, not the employer's tax. That was the argument why proponents of view B said it's not a cash settled plan. So there are different ways to look at the situation and to define who is an agent or principal. I mean, as much as I like the approach, I am also struggling with approach three. So adding to what Scott has said, I'm not sure whether outside the US there is a requirement to withhold portion of shares. I can't imagine that there is such a requirement in Europe. Maybe somebody else knows better than I do. So the question really is with approach three, besides having some problems with adding such a specific thing into the standard, really helps practice out there. So if I would lean more towards approach two then in this sense. So I think that would better suit the issue that we are seeing here.
I do think we've clarified that it's the obligation to pay the tax, not the obligation to withhold the shares.
I was going to ask if other countries have that obligation to pay the tax. Do other countries have the obligation? It's an obligation on the employer, where the employer is required to either get the shares or cash and make that payment to the taxing authorities.
Yeah, that's my understanding. That similar withholding obligations exist in many jurisdictions. But I don't know of any that actually require you to withhold the shares.
No, I don't think so. Okay, let's take a preliminary read. How many would support the staff recommendation for a limited scope? Or let me rephrase it. How many would not object to the staff recommendation for a limited scope?
Not object?
Not object. Okay. So. Okay, I assume that means the others would object. Okay, Laurence would like us to also vote approach two, which is to say the entire thing is equity settled. I believe that's what it says. How many would have approach two as their first choice? Okay. All right, then we will recommend approach three to the board with wording corrections as noted. Okay, Ken, does that put us in paper 5C now?
Sure. Move on to agenda paper 5C. Agenda paper 5C addresses an issue of how to account for modification of the share-based payment transaction that changes its classification from cash settled to equity settled. We think that the results of our outreach activities confirm that this issue is also widespread and there's a significant diversity in practice. In our view, the diversity is caused by the lack of guidance in current requirements in IFRS 2. So we think some guidance should be added to IFRS 2. Even though there's no requirement that specifically addresses a modification of cash settled award in IFRS 2, we think that we could develop a reasonable accounting model by referring to principles in IFRS 2. As stated in this paper, we think that the accounting model adopted in view 2B would be the most appropriate model for this specific transaction for the reason described in this agenda paper. If the committee agreed with proposing an amendment to IFRS 2, that amendment should be performed in a separate narrow scope amendment project because, in our view, adding guidance for this transaction would be perceived as being beyond the scope of annual improvement projects. Do you agree with the staff recommendation?
Comments? No comments at all. How many agree with the staff recommendation?
I think I count 11.
Okay. We have a couple of latecomers to the conversation, though. Ronce?
Yeah. I'm in view 2 for sure. I keep hesitating between view 2A and view 2B. The fact is view 2B, when the modified award, the fair value of the modified awards exceeds the fair value of the awards at the date of modification, the treatment is going to be inconsistent with paragraph 27 of IFRS 2. And that bothers me. So I understand the issue when the fair value of the modified award is lower than the fair value of the previous award at the date of modification, the concerns that some may have to spread to spread that differential. So I was thinking, would there be another alternative, which would be to say that if the fair value of the modified award is lower than the fair value of the previous award at the date of modification, consider it as a settlement of the liability and you take the gain immediately. But if the fair value of the award, modified award exceeds the fair value of the award at the date of modification, just apply paragraph 27 and spread.
Wouldn't the normal case be that the fair value of the modified award would be higher?
That would be the normal case, yeah. You would expect. But
Scott?
Yeah, I was going to bring up something kind of along the same lines. View 2A and 2B, I'm kind of indifferent between the two. But I do have a little concern about driving the answer based on what happens when the fair value of the modified award is lower. because realistically, if that actually happens, I mean, my kind of auditing senses go up and I say, what in the world is going on here? Why would the employee allow that to happen? Why would the law allow that to happen? You know, we're taking away an award worth 100 and replacing it with an award worth 60. Well, you know, that doesn't seem possible after the services have already been rendered. So, you know, I kind of feel like in those situations, yes, sure, if it happens, we do have to account for it. But, you know, in my head, I'm going, yeah, I don't have the complete story here. So I kind of feel like I'd rather not let that situation drive the answer, and I'd rather drive the answer by the more normal situation where the modified award has the same or higher fair value, because I think that's what happens in real life.
Well, in addition to that pragmatic reason, I thought that cash settled award should be remeasured to the fair value or be measured to the settlement amount upon the settlement.
Yes.
And IFRS 2. So I had a concerns from that there's a degrees of the fair value,
mm-hmm.
but also I thought it's more consistent with the principle in mm-hmm. IFRS 2 to be measured to the amount of the settlement upon the settlement date, at the settlement
right.
date.
If you think the cash settled award has a fair value of 70, but the guy takes 60 to settle it, then you know the expense is 60. I certainly understand that. I just don't think in real life that actually happens, because other things are going on that could cause that deal to be made.
Something bad would have had to happen.
Right. The person's getting demoted. I mean, something, you know, something else is happening.
So I take it we're still where we were. Okay. Anything else, Ken?
Can I ask one views for this? I'm considering to adding the implementation guidance as a non-authoritative literature to IFRS 2, but I'd like to ask for your preliminary views on what kind of amendment should be made.
Dito?
Sorry that I didn't raise this question earlier, but I have a question to the staff. When we follow U2B, would that also cover situations where the employer would first change the way of settlement from cash to equity settled with the same value, and then later on they would increase the value within the equity settled? I think then you would probably spread the increase in fair value over the remaining service period. You would not recognize the incremental part.
Yeah.
So I could still avoid having this incremental hit off my P&L by doing it in two steps. Does that create a problem for saying that we follow 2B, or maybe I'm seeing problems here where there are no problems? But
thank you.
John?
Would that possibly be a linked transaction?
Yeah.
You would just consider it as one transaction?
Scott?
I hadn't thought about what Guido's suggestion, but I, you know, I agree that could happen, and I guess, you know, that's another one where kind of my auditing senses go up and say, gee, you said this was two transactions, but was it really? And try to figure out in substance, is it two separate things? In which case, you know, I think you'd achieve what you suggested. And on the other hand, if you kind of dug into it and said, nah, this was all planned together from day one, then try to undo it.
Okay, the question then is the additional application guidance?
Or implementation
guidance, excuse me. And where do we find that in the paper?
Ken? Is this in the paper? It's not in the paper.
Okay. Not in the paper?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're proposing to bring something back to us.
Yeah.
Okay. Seeing heads shaking yes around the table.
And there is a third issue as identified in Ken's cover paper on paper five, which we will bring to the next meeting. And then, depending on your obviously conclusion on that, we'll then bundle up the collection of issues to take those together as one package to the ISB for their consideration at a later date.
Okay.